Welcome to Weldcast, a digital project from the High Plains Library District. This project records, documents, and preserves the rich history of Weld County and its residents through storytelling. The stories are stored digitally and are available to all users at weldcast.us. On this episode of Weldcast, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. Instead of producing an interview that we recorded in the present, we decided to reach back a little further into the past with the help of the Greeley History Museum, which has been recording oral histories for decades and has over 100 interviews all available to the public. I'd like to quickly acknowledge my mother, Marion Ruge, who volunteers at the museum, transcribing these oral histories, and who encouraged us to develop a partnership between Weldcast and the Greeley Museum. And I would like to thank museum employee Sarah Sachs for her help in putting together this episode. The subject of this episode of Weldcast is Skeets Calvin. He's a man who came from humble beginnings on a farm just outside of Greeley, who would go on to live a few lifetimes worth of experiences. The original interview took place on March 20th, 1992, and was conducted by Steve Friesen with assistance from Barbara Tatman, whose voices you'll hear occasionally. We apologize for the quality of some of the audio. And for any clarifications, we'll be posting a transcript of the interview on our website.
I believe that's your mother, Leota?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was my mother.
And then also of your uncle.
Mm-hmm. Uncle Van.
Yeah, and that is the extent of the museum's. And we thought it might be nice to get you while you were still alive.
Well, see, Grandma and Grandma and Van and Aunt Maggie, they pioneered here from Iowa. Mm-hmm. And stopped in Nebraska for a few years there. And probably homesteaded on some bad ground, dry land stuff. Mm-hmm. So then they came on out here to Greeley. Mm-hmm. And their homestead was right out here in the Delta District, which is now a trailer court. And that's where I first sensed that I was alive, was in the house out there, the big house, mm-hmm. big two-story house. And there were farmers at that time. They raised sugar beets and took them to the factory. Cabbage, mm-hmm. everything like that. And Grandpa, he fed a lot of cattle and pigs.
Skeets Calvin grew up on the family homestead, a beet farm mm-hmm. in Cooner, Colorado, which is now probably part of the massive network of JBS Swift feedlots to the east of Greeley.
But you cut down on the cattle and everything because the farm work took care of that. You didn't do much cattle. Maybe just a few in there for butchering in the fall, you know. Uh-huh. But, you get a bigger farm, you're going to be busy. And back in those days, most of your farm work was all hand work, too. You didn't have a fancy tractor or anything.
Yeah.
You cultivated the beets and the beans with two horses on a cultivator mm-hmm. that you controlled with your feet. This mm-hmm. way. And you're cutting ground that close to beets and everything. You had to have a good, steady team of horses. Mm-hmm. You'd walk right down that road just as straight as a pin. Never get in a hurry. Mm-hmm. All when you get ready to go to the barn in the evening, you know, when you're through. They hurried down that driveway. Oh, man, they were going. Get ready to get in the barn.
Skeets didn't quite have the mentality to sit in a classroom all day, but he managed to make it to the 10th grade at Kersey High School before dropping out to spend more time on his true passion of photography.
What kind of work were you doing?
I started my amateur photography career in 1935.
Okay.
With a little Brownie box camera. I did all my developing and everything down in the basement underneath the house out on the farm. No heat down there. In the wintertime, when I had time to do stuff, we weren't working in the field, I built me a little box out of a cigar box and put a light bulb in there mm-hmm. to keep my developer at certain temperatures.
No!
The way I had to work. I'll tell you that.
Oh,
it was
boy.
Froze.
Oh, my gosh.
That's how I got started.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked my way up. Went into the service 30 days after Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And got into the Rex photography there then.
So in early January 1942, just 30 days after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, Calvin signed up to fight in World War II. He was assigned to Hendricks Army Airfield.
Florida, which was the final stage of the B-17 Flying Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they looked over my records for some reason, and they sent me back up to Larry Field.
Skeets found himself back in Colorado, only 50 miles from home, training at Lowry Field, the current site of the Wings Over the Rockies Air and Space Museum in Denver. Coming back home for military training was a blessing for Skeets, because he wasn't just another face in the crowd.
And the instructors there, most of them knew me. They were all from local here. And they went to the commander and said, there's no sense trying to teach that guy. He said he knows more than we do.
Oh.
Well, then they did put me into the more advanced of the motion picture,
mm-hmm.
which was used on the B-17 in aerial bomb spotting.
Mm.
Trained in taking still and motion pictures from B-17 bombers, Skeets was shipped off to Camp Griffiths at Bushy Park near London, England, and assigned to an Air Force bomber squadron.
We were at Bushy Park, very secluded, hidden composite of planes there.
Mm-hmm.
And Hitler would send these fighters or these bombers over there trying to find us, and we never did find us.
Hmm.
He would quickly begin flying combat missions, serving as the tail gunner during enemy engagements, and taking pictures when the fighting subsided. Skeets' experience with photography made him a unique asset as a soldier, but he also carried with him skills that were more conventionally suited for his role of shooting down enemy planes.
If you played it right, they were coming straight in on you, which you naturally knew it was a new fighter,
mm-hmm.
new pilot, and you'd get him every time, see. But they're coming in on a right angle or left angle or up high. Then you had to use your old instinct of shooting pheasants out on the farm. Lead them.
Uh-huh.
Lead them a little bit and let them run right through them.
Huh.
And I teach my other gunners that. I said, don't shoot at them. Hell, they're gone. Before those bullets get out there, they're gone.
Yeah.
So I go to the waist gunner and I said, now see that baby coming in there? Lead him. Lead him about 75 feet right out in front of him. Well, I ain't going to hit him. I says, no, you won't hit him. He'll run right into it. And that was the last time you ever seen one of those fighters coming in on an angle like that. They figured somebody is teaching them how to shoot birds.
Uh-huh.
And that's the only way you could do it.
Huh.
If you shot right at them, you're going to miss
them. They'd be gone by the time the shot was
Where
they were.
And that's the reason I got assigned as the chief gunner. My captain, he thought I was the greatest. He said, boy, I'd sure like to go bird hunting with you. And I said, well, if you ever get together out on the farm, if we get back, I'll take you bird hunting. I said, I'll show you how to shoot ducks and pheasants. He says, I never get hit one. I said, the reason, you're shooting right at them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're either taking off on an angle or they're coming right at you on an angle. He said, never thought of that. Now, when we were going over to, say, over like to Frankfurt or Nuremberg or something like that, we had a fighter opposition, so I was a tail gunner.
Oh, okay.
And since we'd get out a fighter because of ACAC, then I'd go up front ahead of the bomb bay and run the big cameras,
mm-hmm.
the motion picture camera and the big 9x9 field camera, we called it.
Hmm. So you had to do both.
You had to do both.
You shot both kinds, so to speak.
You
shot cameras and you shot guns, huh?
My samples never.
Never dull moment. Yeah, an interesting story. I gotta ask you, that's a nickname, Skeets, right? Did that have anything to do with that, or where did it come from?
The nickname of Skeets ever since I started to
show. Huh. Do you know where it come from?
Some of the teachers or the kids started calling me Skeeter. That was the little
thing. Oh, okay.
And I carried that nickname, and when I signed up for the Army Air Force, they always had places where you put your nickname. That's what Skeet.
Okay.
I care that that
he
way.
Doesn't like it.
Okay.
Dang few people right now in this city if you get the most my record first.
Okay.
You won't say it
out loud. Since I'm not one to know it. I'm not supposed to say it? You
want to
say it? No. You don't want to?
The bank knows it.
The bank knows it. That's good enough, huh?
Good enough.
Okay. He's writing it down for me. Okay.
We don't use that.
So, Skeets Calvin from Cooner, Colorado. And no, we won't be saying Skeets' given name on this podcast. We'll leave that up to any amateur detectives who are curious. So Skeets, all 4 foot 11 inches of him, found himself serving as soldier and documentarian in one of the greatest military conflicts in history. As the Allied forces captured territory and chased the opposition back into Germany, the town of Bad Nauheim in western Germany was used for housing Allied troops, including Skeets Calvin's photo squad.
There was 18 of us in our photo squad, and we covered most ever the area that could be covered, The 18 of us. The way two of the comrades were from Denver, which is unusual to have that close of relation, you know, in the same country. But two of them came out of Denver, and they were both Union Pacific employees on the road. They got drafted into the service.
Yeah, so that's why they were at. So.
They were both pretty good guys, and when we got back out, we'd meet once in a while in Denver, hitch a ride there, clear into Chicago, and loop around there and come back.
In Bad Nauheim, Allied soldiers interacted with the city's German inhabitants, which could obviously get tense on occasion.
Well, yeah, we had to carry our 45s all the time. Because the older German people, especially down in this area here, they were really nice. They didn't want the war. It was brought on by Hitler. And the younger ones are the ones we had to watch, so. You know, they've probably been under Hitler and everything. And they still had that blood feeling for him. But the older people were really nice. When we ever had to stay somewhere, we always go to a private German home because they'd agree us right off the bat. A lot of this stuff here would travel from Bad Nauheim. And then when I got shipped to the Pacific, it was the same program there. We used the same program. We got one big headquarters, and then we either flew or drove jeeps out of there.
One of the ironies of being a war photographer is that you often would never get to see the magazines or newspapers where your photos were published. One picture that Skeets actually was able to see was published in the newspaper Stars and Stripes and required a bit of patience and some know-how to make it happen.
A great, big, enormous swarm of bees decided to camp down on the hub of a B-17 engine. There they were, a great big. So I had thought of a good story. So I told the guys to leave them alone, just leave them. They're not going anywhere anyway. So I had the master sergeant go and get a tech order. Everything you did in the service, you had to go over the tech book, tech orders. Even if you went to the bathroom, I think. But he went and got one, and he's up on top of the engine. And he's got the tech book open here, and he's scratching his head. He's trying to figure out. There it is. There. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
He's trying to figure out how to get those bees off the hub. Yeah, Stars and Stripes used that one. That was cute. Yeah. That's
so you combined the technical ability in terms of photography with the inspiration as well, the creative eye. That's what makes it. Oh, there we go.
That's quick shooting.
Yeah.
You have to know exactly, well, he waved to me. And I knew just a few seconds later he was leaving. And you have to catch it now because you don't realize that guy's going down just like a bomb.
And he's gone before you can get it.
Gone before you know it.
3 weeks before the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, in July of 1945, Skeets and his photo squadron of 18 men were transferred to the island of Guam to document the results of fighting in the South Pacific theater of the war.
When we got to Guam, they knew they had a feeling what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent us over there, and we, nice day, we'd go up flying. And the captain says, if you see any unusual cloud formation or anything, take pictures of it. That's all he could tell us. Well, we were dumb up at the time when the atomic bomb was dropped. And that was the reason for it. Because when it started building up, it built up a regular thunder head, looked like.
Did you ever see it?
Never did get to
see
it.
Never see it. Okay.
Although he didn't photograph the mushroom cloud from the initial blast, Skeets was part of the first group to survey and document the damage to Hiroshima, which meant that his photo squadron was close at hand when the Japanese agreed to sign terms of surrender on September 2, 1945. Skeets traveled to the signing on the command ship the USS Ancon, a ship that, like Skeets, had spent most of the early part of the war in the European theater.
Then we went from Guam and to Tokyo when the treaty was to be signed.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the USS Ancon, which is the Pacific signal ship fleet.
Mm-hmm.
To the fleet. And we thought it was a monster ship. Uh-huh. We pulled in there and pulled up alongside of the battleship Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to get on top of that.
Kind of dwarfed your ship then.
And we went in a little door right at the water line.
Mm-hmm.
And this sailor took us back, probably 200 feet, and put us on an elevator. And we went clear up to the top deck by elevator where the treaty was to be signed.
I was wondering, you know, your selection then to do the photographic work at the treaty, was that also a reflection of your particular group's skill at it? That you were considered sort of
one of the top groups in the photography field.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to assignment, we were the ones that had to move.
All right.
They moved us all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Jeep, by air, you name it, water. And when we left Tokyo, we stayed in Tokyo for probably a month doing photography in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But when we left, we came back to San Francisco on the same USS Ancon.
Okay.
And that was a trip. Boy, you talk about fun.
Mm-hmm.
It took 2 weeks to come back.
Okay.
They were just cruising along. They wasn't up top speed. They figured the war's over. We're going to have fun.
Uh-huh.
Get up on the second deck there, and they had 12-gauge shotguns, and we'd keep shooting.
Skeet shoot. With 12-gauge shotguns off the deck of the ship.
Some of them sailors wondered where the heck we learned to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
From San Francisco, Skeets traveled back to Denver, where he was discharged at Fort Logan, the same place where he had registered for the service 4 years earlier.
I got flown back to Fort Logan. That's where I went in, Fort Logan. And that's where I got kicked out. In Fort Logan.
Not kicked out, but right?
No. We had what they called maybe for they had different colors. They had the blue discharge, they had a yellow one, they had the red one. The red one was for maybe handicaps that had gotten wounded or something. Mm-hmm. They were first priority. And the second one was the blue one. And the yellow one was they had no definite reason to be out, but the government wanted to get rid of them anyway, cut expenses. We were second with the blue ones.
Okay.
And when I hit Fort Logan, they had all my papers, discharge papers, ready to go. All I had to do was sign them, took a quick physical. In 7 hours, I was out of there, down at the railroad station, catching a train back to Greeley.
Back to Greeley.
And that was the end of my, almost around the world.
Uh-huh.
I would have made it if I could have gotten assigned to China. I really didn't want to go to China. The rest of them did, because that was a touchy situation over there anyway at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It still is.
Did you have any trouble adjusting after you got back?
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
What was your major problem?
It just seemed like when I got back here, and of course the folks were still out on the farm, naturally I'd go out there. And it just seemed like the world had come to an end. See? It was completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Out there, I stayed on the farm with the folks for 1 year. But it just couldn't happen. It wasn't what I had been trained for.
Uh-huh. Was the life a little too slow compared to what you've been doing? Just too slow?
You just couldn't move fast enough. See? So that's when I came and started to work at the Greeley Tribune.
Uh-huh.
Worked there, what did I have, 4 years?
4 years. But basically you weren't a photographer at the Tribune.
Mm-mm. I was an engraver and a press operator.
Mm-hmm.
That's unusual.
And so Skeets, who had once been sent around the world to photograph monumental historic events, now turned his lens on Greeley, Colorado, and the surrounding communities. I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that Skeets is one of the great visual documentarians in the history of this region. He worked as a photographer and engraver for the Greeley Tribune, as well as the now defunct Greeley Journal. In 1950, Skeets became a photographer for the Greeley Rodeo, which would later become the Greeley Stampede, a position he would hold for more than 25 years. After facing down enemy fighter planes during the war, standing in the path of a charging bull might not have seemed so intimidating.
They had an old white frame out there in the rodeo that was the meanest bull you ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
He was so big, he'd just take and get up underneath a horse and just dump him. Well, I decided one afternoon out there, he backed up against the fence, run all the cowboys off the fence, and he backed up there and he was looking at me. And I just kept walking up to him with my camera and talking to him. I said, just stay there, I'm going to get a picture. I guess that audience said, do I come on court?
Yes. I can attest to that, I
would.
That
old bull never did move.
Hmm.
He just stood there looking me right in the eye.
And you just faced him down, so to speak.
I got one shot, and I turned around, and about three pickup cowboys came between me and him.
Okay.
On the way back to the fence.
Yeah. He had three riders backing him up, just to make sure he didn't get...
Yeah, I always had one of those pickup guys. Was always one.
In 1956, Skeets took a position as the official photographer for the Colorado State College, which would later be renamed the University of Northern Colorado. It may have seemed like a safer assignment at the time, but taking photos during football games could prove hazardous as well.
After that ball was caught, because I have a distinct feeling he got run over.
One afternoon we were playing the Air Force up here at UNC.
Mm-hmm.
There was about four little Air Force guys just clobbered me good right out there on that field. They came over and picked me up and asked me if I was all right. I said, yeah, I'm all right. Boy, they sure did. Right from the back. Because I was waiting for the play to come from this way.
Oh, and unexpected. Oh, man.
Defense. Yeah.
There isn't much basic biographical information on Skeets to be found in the 1992 interview. According to the Greeley Museum's notes on the Skeets Calvin collection, he was married to Juanita Goodwin Kane in 1948, and they adopted a son, Larry Kane.
Up in Sheridan, Wyoming now, superintendent school. And when he went, to, when I was working at the, with the Colorado State College then, was at UNC, where he was going to grade school up there. About every other day, I'd have to go over to the principal's office and bail him out. Getting in trouble, the kid could get in trouble.
Last time you saw him was a reunion.
Oh, no, yeah, and the first time I'd seen him for years. See, he went through university high school, graduated.
Uh-huh.
And then he came to me and he said, Dad, I want to go to college and get me a master's degree in teaching and the work you do in the superintendent's office. I said, get with it. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I said, get in trouble, I'll come bail you out like I have for years. After he graduated from grade school and went into high school, he completely changed. It turned clear around and went the other way. What he did was going to be perfect.
Hmm.
One shot I got on him, one is up at Pinewood Lake, where the old rattlesnake lake, above Loveland, above the Flat Iron Park plant. Quite a little drive up there. But the lake just lays in a little valley, good sized lake. But he always liked to go fishing. That's the only time I could keep him in one place. I'd find him a spot where it'd be good for him to fish. And he sat there on that rock by the hours and never moved.
Hmm.
But I don't know where you got one of them.
I have it somewhere.
Yeah.
But tell what happened when you saw him at UNC, when you were photographing
the
Union.
But that lake is just this glass clear. No wrinkles on it or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting there on that rock with his knees, just a little pole out there in the water. He sat that way for a good hour. What he was thinking about out there looking out in that lake, I don't know. But then I went up on a little hill and shot where I could get down on him. Mm-hmm. Cute one.
Mm-hmm.
Did he develop much of an interest in photography, too?
Not that I know. Maybe a little bit of amateur or something like that.
Yeah.
Him and his wife and things like that.
How about the grandkid?
Yeah, the granddaughter.
Granddaughter, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see grandchild, granddaughter. Okay.
You know, a year ago this last Christmas Eve, I got a phone call about 11 o'clock. And it was him. He said, "Dad, I got good news for you." I said, "What is it?" He said, "You are now grandpa." As of about an hour ago, I said, "Well, congratulations. Tell your wife, good luck."
The date of his divorce from Juanita isn't in the notes, but he remarried Loretta Ann Drossler in 1956. According to Skeets, he is the last member of the Calvin family line.
Wasn't that the first time the National Park Service had authorized snowmobiles in the park itself?
To get involved with that particular
situation. Because that's a wilderness area.
And they called us in here from Greenville.
So you were involved with that organization for a while then, for a bit?
Oh, I was with Snow Rescue for 10 years.
Okay. Where did you do most of your work? You didn't go into the park so much then?
No, our area was Red Feathers.
Okay.
Back in Dunn Creek Basin.
Mm-hmm.
Back in that area there. We pulled a lot of cross country out of that area back in there, you know. Damn near froze. But the ranger would send us out. Got a radio contact that there's two up at the Hampson cabin, which was a cabin that used by the rangers in the summertime to herd their cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we knew right where it was at.
Mm-hmm.
Going into it was great, but boy, coming back out, it's the son of a gun.
What was difficult about coming out?
And there again, we'd have to follow the trail. Because if you got off that trail, you just forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're buried.
It's too deep.
Too deep.
This is Skeets describing his time with Snow and Rescue. Listening to Skeets describe his life can make one feel a bit lazy. In addition to doing search and rescue, Skeets was a pilot who took aerial photographs of the region, holding the airplane controls between his knees while he shot pictures out of the window.
I still have my pilot's license, even at 70, damn near 76.
Mm-hmm.
I had to have it renewed every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my age. But there's a lot of aerial stuff that I've taken around here after I got out of the service. And I did it myself in a 710 Luscombe. Hold a stick between my legs, send it out, or set it cockeyed,
find
a cockeye, and shoot out the window.
Okay. So you did a lot of aerial photography, really, at that point?
Did all of the Horsetooth, Carter Lake. Did all that. That was for the government. I did that whole thing. I got a complete story of the drilling of the Adams Tunnel.
Little
bacteria. That was a lot of work, too. That's working for Caribbean.
Unfortunately, there's just no way to do justice to all of Skeets' accomplishments in this brief format. But I should at least mention the 21 times he summited Long's Peak, most of them hiking alone. or his term as the head grower at Erickson's greenhouse, or even his second term in the military. He was also a decorated member of his VFW post. These events, that would be remarkable in most lives, are simply relegated to mere footnotes in this story. As a photographer, Skeets Calvin knew better than most the importance of timing. He described himself as a one-shot photographer. Timing for Skeets meant the possibility of freezing a moment to tell a story, a hobby and philosophy that echoes into his entire way of life. He's a man who seized opportunities as they arose, and whose life tells a profound story as a result. He's the rare person who seemed to appreciate that life is a one-shot endeavor. Thank you for listening to this episode of Weldcast. If you would like more information about the project or would like to participate, please visit our website at weldcast.us or by calling 1-888-861-7323. This has been a production of the High Plains Library District.